In addition to Section 112054B1, there was another trust section that was changed in 2017. This is referenced in the paper. It's not on the slide, but it's Section 111.0035. And that section of the trust code states that the terms of the trust may not limit the power of the court to reform a trust. So again, stating that even if the trust document itself prohibits reformation or amendment, we have the authority, the courts have the authority to do so. All right, let's talk about what's necessary, the necessary findings for reformation under Section 112054B-1. So this first section, if we want to reform the trust for administrative non-dispositive provisions, we can do so if the reformation would prevent waste or allow for efficient administration of the trust. And we can reform under this section even if there's no evidence of the settlor's intent. So if all we're doing is changing the administrative or management provisions, powers of the trustee, we can do that even if there is no expressed intent of the settlor that we can find. So this might be if you're changing investment provisions, if you've got a trust that was created that did not include, let's say, the prudent investor rules, and the trustee wants to reform that trust, we can do that under this provision regardless of whether we have settlor's intent. We may also use this provision to reform a trust if we want to change the way a trustee is appointed or successors are appointed. We can do that. I'm going to skip over B1-2 for just a second, and we're going to talk about B1-3. That permits reformation to correct a scrivener's error to conform to the settlor's intent only if we have clear and convincing evidence to support that reformation. So under subsection 3, if we're just trying to correct a scrivener's error, we have to have clear and convincing evidence of what the settlor's intent was under that section. And now we're going to skip back over to subsection 2, which is the one that I'm most interested in. This is a reformation to achieve a settlor's tax objectives or to qualify a beneficiary for government benefits, not contrary to a settlor's intent. Now, obviously, it's sometimes difficult to prove a negative. So how do you prove that a settlor, that reforming a trust is not contrary to a settlor's intent? Well, I would say we should approach it from a common law sense position. So if it can be reasoned that a settlor creates a trust for a beneficiary, then we can assume that the settlor wishes to benefit the beneficiary to some extent. And if denying a beneficiary access to valuable government benefits causes the gift of the trust to be dissipated quickly, we could probably infer that the settlor would wish to benefit the beneficiary to the greatest extent possible through the use of the trust. So modifying or reforming the trust to create a special needs trust would be in line with the settlor's intent most likely. So even if absent a public dissent from a settlor that, you know, they are against public benefits for moral reasons, if someone has, you know, published something saying that, then maybe that would be evidence contrary to reformation. But absent something like that, I would say common sense reasoning would allow us to reform to create a special needs trust to allow a beneficiary to qualify for government benefits. We also need to talk about jurisdiction and venue. So district courts in Texas have jurisdiction over general trust matters. Of course, probate courts retain jurisdiction over matters involving the interpretation and administration of a testamentary trust if the will creating the trust has been admitted to probate. And guardianships we know guardianship courts can create trusts. So if a trust was created in guardianship court, then that would be where jurisdiction is proper. Now, when it comes to venue, if a trustee is a single person, the county where the trustee resides or where the administration of the trust is taking place is where venue would be proper. If there are multiple trustees and all of those are non-corporate trustees, then venue is proper in any county where one of the trustees resides. And finally, if you've got a corporate trustee, venue is proper in the county where the principal office of that corporate trustee is. Now, just remember that venue, of course, is permissive. So if you've got a beneficiary in Houston and the corporate trustee's primary office is here in Austin, it may be possible and more beneficial for everyone involved to file in Harris County where your beneficiary is rather than in here in Austin. Just remember that jurisdiction, if it's a general trust matter, would be with the district courts.